Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the LEGO Masters podcast here on Reality TV Rehafups. I'm your host, Liana Boris, and LEGO Masters Season 2, it's on! Or one of the many catchphrases we got that hopefully kicks off Season 2. Now, I may be an expertise in all things, or maybe an expert, I should say, in all things Masked Singer, but I had to bring in our very own LEGO Master. That's right. It's my sister, Marisa Connors. Marisa, how you doing?
I am doing awesome. Everyone is awesome. Everything is awesome. Super excited to start talking about this.
Yes. Okay. So if you are new here, Marisa and I did some coverage of LEGO Masters Season 1, the US season of LEGO Masters. And I think we're going to do a pretty similar format here. So we're going to cover the season premiere, which is the episode that we watched last night. And then we'll do a couple of check-ins throughout the season and, of course, wrap things up at the finale. But I could not tell you how excited I was to see LEGO Masters back. I thought it was a really fun experience last season, and I'm really happy that we're able to do this again.
Yeah, me too. When they got renewed, I was super excited and just kind of waiting to hear if it was an okay if we got to do this again, because I enjoyed talking to you about LEGOs and just getting to talk about my passion in general and various other things, because, you know, that's the most we talked in a while last time.
Like, rebuilding those sisterly bonds over the brilliance that is LEGO Masters. So just in case anybody is checking us out for the first time, do you want to give your little LEGO backstory, your area of expertise, how many freaking LEGOs you have that literally you have a whole room dedicated to them, organized in bins, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I would love to. So I got into LEGOs as a very young kid. There is a cassette tape out there of me when I was a little older than two playing with LEGOs and talking about LEGOs. And you hear just the sound in the background of me shuffling around in LEGOs. So it's been going on for a long time. When I was in eighth grade, I wrote to the LEGO company asking what I should go to school for to work for them. Didn't pan out that way, but I still kept the passion. And like Liana said, I have an entire room full of LEGOs now that I am slowly sorting through and organizing, and when I get a wild hair, building stuff. And so from young to now.
Yeah, you know, the usual childhood obsession turned adult obsession with adult money now able to spend. I shudder to think the amount of money you spent on LEGOs.
I was pretty good this past year. You know, you'd think pandemic, I was going to spend a bunch. But honestly, I was actually one of the lucky ones to work through all of it. So I didn't have as much time to spend on LEGOs. But I did get the one set that I talked about getting during our last podcast, which was the big Lamborghini set. And my project to build it is very much underway, but very tinily underway, because I've done like maybe 40 frames out of a who knows how many thousands of frames I'm going to have for this stop motion video to build it. So,
well, the good news is you have a whole LEGO Masters season to help motivate you to continue to work on the project.
I do. I know. I felt a little guilt that I hadn't done it yet because it's been a year.
Oh, look at these other, I'm sure, well-adjusted adults playing with hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars worth of Legos.
Yeah. 5 million Legos, to be exact.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, so, all right, great. Well, let's jump in. Let's talk about some things about season two. So there were some things that stayed the same and some things that changed. So, of course, we have Will Arnett coming back as the host. I think a really great fit. I've actually been listening to his podcast with Jason Bateman. Smartless. It's got... Oh my God, I can't believe I can't remember his name. The guy from Will and Grace. What's his name? Eric Hayes? Is that his name?
Yes, I think that's right.
Sean Hayes. Smartless. Yes. So it's been a very much like Will Arnett couple of days, but I'm really appreciative that he's back. And we have our two Brickmasters, Amy and Jamie, coming back as well. Yay. Were you happy to see them?
Yeah, I really enjoyed them as judges last year, and they had some good insight, and they've been kind of interesting. I followed Amy on Twitter, and she's always got some fun little posts going on, so I'm excited to see him back.
Well, now we got to talk about what's different. So last season, we had 10 teams. This season, we're upping that to 12 teams, which I'm always happy to see the expansion of the season, because typically it means they probably got a little bit more money. I mean, like you said, Marisa, they went from 3 million bricks to 5 million bricks, which I would also, again, shudder to think about how much money that costs. And more editing, more screen graphics.
I wrote that down, but then I wrote, but did not have a Lamborghini this time.
No Lamborghini this time, and only Ken Jeong on video screen for our guests, at least so far, but we'll see what else the season brings. So what did you think about the increase to 12 teams?
I thought it was interesting because I think it's still only supposed to be 10 episodes like it was last time, but maybe I misread that somewhere. So I'm curious to see, especially with the, you know, reveal at the end of the episode this time, what's going to happen as far as eliminations go.
Right. So, you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched the episode, we will be spoiling the events of this episode. So if you are interested in watching the episode first, go take a look at that. But come on back to us. If you don't care, hang out. Have fun. We're going to have a great time anyway, even if you didn't watch the show. And what Marisa is talking about is the fact that we have 12 teams, and then we had a non-elimination episode, which, okay. So the thing is that RuPaul's Drag Race has done this a lot, especially recently. We had like 3 non-eliminations at the beginning of this last season. And I liked it from the perspective of you get to know the contestants a little bit better. And especially when you have 12, this episode felt jam-packed. Yeah. And I was barely remembering the teams by the time we got to the end. I kept confusing Zach and Wayne and Zach and Tim. And then... somebody, I was like, wait, are Zach and Wayne are the father son, but they look the same age. It was very confusing, but I think I'll be able to handle it, hopefully with a little bit more time to get to know these teams.
Yeah, no, I agree. There was definitely the Zach and Tim, like you mentioned. I mean, they barely got much in far as airtime goes. And so when I was doing my rewatch, I was like, wait, where'd these guys come from?
The twins also, they actually didn't get a introduction to them segment until maybe 30 minutes, 35 minutes in. And I kept seeing, I didn't know they were twins. I probably should have done some research on the teams before, but I was like, God, this guy is showing up a lot. Oh, turns out there's 2 of them. That's why they're here. Okay. All right. So that's all making sense. There were a few teams we got to know, I guess, a little bit better because they either ended up in the top or the bottom, but we'll go through and talk about each team. The task that they were assigned in this first episode is the Lego Day Parade. So the teams were tasked with building an eye-catching float in the first ever Lego Day Parade. I loved this because as someone who's been to Legoland, this definitely I've seen this before in the Legoland parks.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good theme and a cool idea to kind of showcase, you know, on a limited size scale, but, you know, build as big as you can. What you're about, they're supposed to, you know, put themselves into it and kind of tell a story with it. The fact that they had to include movement, I'm pretty sure they had to do that in the first episode last season. So I think one of the teammates said, "What movement already?" And I was like, "Wait, didn't you watch last season?" So
be prepared, get it together. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was really neat and a cool idea to bring in opportunity for lots of color and excitement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that episode from season one, because that was the theme park episode, because Mark and Boone's their little roller coaster thing stopped moving, or maybe. I don't know, whatever. Clearly, I don't remember.
It just didn't work. Yeah, right. So heartbreaking.
And I see also the no team was eliminated on that episode as well. So I guess there's precedent for it in the US version. So
yep. Yeah.
So here they were looking for what the judges outlined. And this is something that I remember us discussing last season as well, is the element of storytelling as a judging element is sometimes a little tough, because I think the technical abilities, right? So that's for me at least a little bit easier to understand. If you can do something cool with motion, if two of your wheels don't work, I can tell that that's a fail. But the storytelling element, and we'll get into it when we talk about one team in particular, I think it was actually the twins, that it doesn't really translate for me, because they don't spend enough time looking at the builds, like the camera on the build, for me to see it, for me to tell what exactly is going on.
No, I absolutely agree. And that's actually a note I had written down too, because if you remember I think it was the very last challenge of last season for the, you know, winner, they had to tell a story, but they couldn't narrate in that one. And so it had to be an obvious storyline for that project. Or maybe it was a one before that. I don't remember. But I know there was a challenge in which they couldn't narrate what was supposed to be going on. So you really have to pay attention to those details to make sure people can tell what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And can follow the story. And that's something that just it's tough as a viewer. I will say overall, I really enjoyed the show. But if I'm going to nitpick something, that's probably the thing that I don't really have a handle on when it comes to the judging. But the movement, I always love that as an inclusion, because I think that's something that separates the children from the adults, if you will, because those that have a lot of experience, I think, play with those movement pieces. Because what was like that first movement Lego set? Did you have it, the robot one?
There was a little bit of movement stuff before that, but the first Mindstorm set came out in the late 90s. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and it was really cool. And it's evolved a lot. They have, you know, new versions of it that mine actually doesn't work on the computer anymore because it's too old. But
gotta get some Windows 95 running, and then maybe you'll be able to pull it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I guess it would have been 98 at that point. But it's cool because that level of movement, there's actually a YouTube channel called Brick Experiment Channel, where this guy uses the motors to try and do real world things like shredding paper. And he'll test, you know, the different Lego wheels for what their coefficients of friction are, and does all sorts of things with the movement, which is kind of fun.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm actually looking forward. I heard that that's a couple episodes from now. They're doing the office appliance version of a challenge. You got to make a shredder. You got to figure out how to make a copier. That one, I don't know. They're on their own. That sounds super impressive to me.
Actually, there somebody has built one of those. So
for real?
I mean, it's not like a photocopier, but it's a little digital drawer copier thing.
Say,
although Clippy. They should build Clippy, I think.
A classic story, a classic tale of one paperclip's journey to try to teach you how to use Microsoft Word. Yeah. Okay. Love
and get
that.
Constantly yelled at.
What a story. Shut up, Clippy. Go away, Clippy.
Yeah, I don't care, Clippy.
What a journey. All right. And so the last thing to touch on before we jump into all of these teams is the Golden Brick is back. So can you remind me exactly how this works? It's an immunity thing, right? But you have to choose to use it before you end up in the bottom two?
Yes. So it's last year they introduced it, and it was basically, you know, if you won the challenge that it was available in, then you got to hold this golden brick. If you felt like your build in one of the next episodes was starting to fail and you didn't think you were going to do well, you could choose to use it to get out of being the bottom two. But it sounds like they're adding something new this year, where if you don't choose to use it and you do end up in the bottom two, then you lose it anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a new twist on it.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I don't know if it'll make a difference. I guess we'll find out if the winning team does end up using it here, which Zach and Wayne, the brothers, not the father son. They are very much the same age and they're not related in that way. Okay. Is there anything else, Marisa, you want to touch on before we start jumping into each of these teams?
I just think that I'm glad they got casting done, because I know that was an issue during the pandemic. I think they put out like 2 or 3 different casting calls to try and get people. So I'm excited to see they got so many teams, and I'm excited for this season.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. Obviously we don't exactly know how they did the casting. I'm sure it was just having to be online and all of the casting was done that way. I know some shows actually just did straight up recruiting, like Drag Race Down Under just recruited queens. So I'm happy here. It seems like they actually were able to go through a general recruitment process, because I'm happy with a lot of the teams that we have so far, and I'm excited to get to know them.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh,
so let's do
it. let's get, well, oh, look at you taking the ring.
Hey, I listen to you guys.
You're like, oh God, what are all their names? You're like Natalie and or Michelle willing to take over for Will Arnett is the host, the co-host of the show. Okay.
I'm not going to lie. I did think about that. I was like, ooh, that could be a fun job.
How do I get that job? You should write a letter like it worked so well for you when you were 8 and say what career path do I need to take in order to get this job?
Or, you know, we just go on, and since we know they don't eliminate the first episode, then we get 2 episodes with Will Arnett to hang out.
Ah, there we go. That's really my dream. I just want to meet Will and hang out and have a great time. And Amy probably.
Yeah.
And I guess Jamie will also be there. Maybe we'll get Ken Jeong.
Man, actually, that would be the best if you got to be on an episode that Ken Jeong was on.
That would truly be a dream.
That would make me so happy to see that.
I know exactly who this is.
Yes!
Well, and I think that's going to be... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say there's a quilter's nest in town here that sells like fabric for quilting, and they have a new radio ad at it. They keep saying... Do you know who to see? And it just makes me think of Masked Singer.
Are they named after owls? Is there some relation to owls? Is why that is the...
Yeah, I think their logo's an owl or something.
Oh, but
yeah, I see. There's like 3 or 4 times in the commercial that they're like, who? And I just think of, Masked Singer.
Ken Jeong. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the association they wanted you to make. So good job.
It is.
Okay, let's meet our very first team. Zach and Wayne. So Zach and Wayne are the sushi chefs from California. These guys are brothers. They talk about the fact that their parents immigrated to the United States, and they're the ones that made the Soaring Dragon float.
Yeah, I thought this was awesome. And I mean, if you watched any of the commercials leading up to the show, it showed up in all of them.
Yeah.
So once you kind of see them build it, you're like, oh, yep, okay. This is promo material right here. But it was awesome. And the fact that they're sushi chefs and the way they made the movement of the dragon, it almost looked like little sushi segments, which I thought was mm-hmm. really cool.
I thought, right, exactly. So each of them kind of look like little individual sushi rolls, and they do talk about how the creativity in sushi, it can translate to Legos. Who would have thought? Transferable skills. Put that on your resume.
Right,
and,
nice.
But here's what I think the coolest part was, the movement. And I think that the judges commented on this, of how they were able to get the pieces to have both connected movement in all of the different pieces, and then as well as the two dragons. I thought that was just really outstanding. And if the goal of the challenge is to make some type of spectacle with movement, I think they really achieved that here.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think that, you know, spoiler alert, they're the ones that end up winning at the end of the day, and there's good reason for it. They made really good use of the challenge with the movement and then telling a story about themselves. I forget which one was red and which one was blue, but they had, you know, their personality traits were the ones that went with those.
Right, with each of the dragons. I this is where I was trying to, as I was taking notes, I was pausing and I was trying to get a better look at some of the floats. And I felt like they also had a lot of just really cool details and using pieces in unique ways that I wish the show would focus on more. The way they did the clouds out of the like umbrella tops. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going to call them. You know what I'm talking about? The little roundy, smooth things that have the little circle-y thing.
And
the technical term, right, for that. Yep. The roundy, smooth things. Yeah.
Roundy, smooth things, yes.
And they use that for the clouds. And I thought that that was really cool, but it wasn't necessarily emphasized. And so that's just, again, another one of my little picking nitpicky things about it, that I wanted to see the builds, because I think what all of the contestants, and especially Zach and Wayne, created is just really beautiful.
Absolutely. And I think you and I talked about this a little bit last year, especially in the early episodes where you have more teams and there's not enough time to spend on them. It'd be neat if they could post the designs, you know, in a little 3D look online, and then you could go look at them. Because I agree, mm-hmm. there's, you know, that's actually one of the biggest complaints that I've seen in the LEGO community about this show, is the people who are, you know, like the LEGO Masters and like myself, want to see those details and the intricacies. Whereas, you know, when the TV show is aimed for, you know, it's aimed at kids, but it was what, the highest new show for 18 to 49 year olds or something like that, which is basically the demographic that grew up with LEGO.
Right.
and now are adults, but. Yeah.
and that's that's tough. I mean, it's a creative decision that they went with. I don't know if I don't want to say simplification necessarily, but the lack of focusing on those details, maybe, I don't know, makes it more appealing. What the f- do I know? I'm not I don't know anything about TV. Sorry.
This isn't the Masked Singer.
I know. I can't get away with that here.
What the brick do you know, Liana?
What the brick do I know? Yeah, exactly. I'll go in and edit that. Okay. Zach and Wayne. So I want to get your predictions on Zach and Wayne. How do you think they're going to do in the competition? Obviously, they win here. So for me, you know, I got to say at least top half of the competition.
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to make it pretty far, because I think they met the challenge as expected, and, you know, what they were looking for in the challenge, they did a good job of making it afloat. So if you were actually a minifig on that street, you know, you could see a lot of the details still and a lot of the movement. And just the model making of the dragons themselves was really well done. So, yeah, I think they're going to go pretty far.
Yeah, I think so as well. Okay, let's jump into the next team. So this is Sarita and Randall. They are from Queens, New York, and Chicago. I assume Sarita is from Queens and Randall is from Chicago. These guys are friends, and I actually looked them up online. So they have the first Black-owned creative studio for LEGO art, and they got a little bit of a plug in the show, but they have the whole Instagram page, website, all that, where they make their own limited edition LEGO pieces. And so I think they pulled a lot of that inspiration for what they created for the four elements of hip hop.
Yeah, I think, their sculpture really well represented, because they said that's how they met as well. So it also told the story of how they became friends and what their interests are. And it really showed what's going on as far as, you know, technical. The record moved, but I think they could have done a little more to, you know, make that stand out, or maybe make the DJ move with it or something. But overall, I think it was a well-made float.
Mm-hmm. I think it's cool for the movement perspective, if you're looking at it from the top down. But again, if the argument is that it's supposed to be a float, or maybe put something on the turntable, so then it's,
yeah,
there's something that you can see from the quote-unquote street. But otherwise, I thought it was really colorful. I loved the tagging art. I thought was a neat mm-hmm. little detail that they added, and then they actually had the art on the side. I thought the way they created that was pretty cool, and it definitely felt like a float. I thought maybe it could have been a little bit taller. Some of the other floats get critiques about this height thing, and so it's kind of hard to tell a little bit how tall they are without in reference of one another. The speakers are massive, so maybe that ends mm-hmm. up giving it a lot of the height, but that would be probably the only thing negative I would have to say about this.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it was well done.
Yes, I think so as well. I think, you know, these guys obviously have a really unique perspective, given the fact that the majority of the people are white on the season. And so I think that they bring in this different elements of creativity to the show. And I am optimistic for them. They get a lot of really great praise from the judges. I just think, you know, there's some real nerds on this show for a complimentary term. Like, it's cool that what they're able to do. And I just, based on the movement part here, it just like makes me a little bit nervous. I still think they'll probably be in the top half, but it just, you know, you like can't help but see what those other dudes, which we'll talk about later, with the big old snake or whatever. Who does that? That's wild. Yeah. Anyway, but super happy about them. I'm happy they're on the season.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I do see them going top half, and you know, they work well together too. That was actually one thing that I noticed about this episode that was different from the first episode is, you know, the first season, they tried to still have a little bit of the in-team drama at the beginning. And it doesn't seem like they're going for that necessarily this season, which I think is good. I don't think it needs to have that. I know you like drama, but
yeah, fight, throw bricks at each other. Waste
you don't know
money.
How to build.
Yeah. Throw a robot head.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, well, speaking of robot heads, I don't know if that's a good transition. We're going to talk about the engineers, Paris and Modo. They are from Boston and Denver, Colorado. Shout out, Denver. Let's go. They are friends. They are engineers. They are dads. And inexplicably, for some reason, wearing lab coats.
And extremely, I think it was Paris was wearing the really colorful shirt.
Yes. There's
colorful.
A lot of really colorful shirts on the season so far. But
the
lab coats, I don't know a single engineer that wears a lab coat. I don't. As an engineer, I do not know a single one that wears a lab coat.
So, and you even work in a lab.
Yeah, I literally work in a lab and no one wears lab coats. I mean, there are, you know, most of them are biologists or MDs, but still. So I don't know if that was their choice. They're like, yeah, we're gonna have the lab coats. Maybe they wear lab coats in their day-to-day job. I'm just speaking from my own personal experience, but every single time I saw their lab coats, it's like, what, why?
It's branding, Liana, get with it.
Seriously, maybe that's what I should do. All my pictures should be in lab coats. I think the only picture I have of me in lab is when it was super super cold in the lab because we were having like heat problems and I'm wearing a winter coat. But I think that's the only coat I've been wearing.
Man, maybe I might have worn a lab coat more than you back when I was doing geochemistry.
I think so.
I'm staring at the picture of myself on my phone right now, and I'm in a lab coat.
So that's more than me. Don't tell the OSHA or whoever inspects us.
Yeah, right?
Okay. All right, so the engineers, yeah. What do you got?
I thought their idea of making robots was kind of fun because robots lend themselves to movement, but there's a lot of difficult movement in them, which, you know, kind of came up as they were building it. But I think they ended up making some robots that were, in their own words, spasmatic. Mm-hmm. Spasmodic. Sorry. But
I loved the face of the robot.
Yeah.
There was something about it. I don't know if it was the giant eyes or the eyebrows or what it was, but I felt the face was very captivating to me. It made me want to play with it. It looked like a toy.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, last season we talked about how that character type building really did well for Tyler and Amy. And I think these guys did really well with that kind of character engaging face look.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I think the colors were really great. You know, one of the critiques that they got was that the adult robots didn't interact with the baby robots, which I couldn't even see the baby robots. So I don't know if that's the fault of the builders or the fault of the TV show for not doing the little downward focus.
Sure.
But other than that, the giant robots were cool. They got the movement to sort of work.
Yeah,
I saw the arm. I mean, I saw the arms move and I saw the heads turn and both of them seemed to move. I couldn't detect a pattern to it, but at least there was movement, which I think fulfills the criteria of the challenge.
Yeah, right. And it's, yeah, I think it's kind of more fun to have robots that are a little spastic.
Yeah.
You know, predictable robots, although that might scare children in a float. So who knows?
I mean, as long as it's not so much the crazy Chuck E. Cheese robots and more so lovable, non-taking over the world robots with beautiful colors, then I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, the eyes were much less dead than Chuck E. Cheese robots.
Yes. Or what was the pizza one?
Oh, Pizza Time? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those are terrifying.
But yeah, I think, you know, they did a good job. And yeah, there might have been too much detail, too much busyness on the bottom that was hard to see. But the robots, the big robots themselves were really good.
Right. And I didn't even think compared to some of the others, I didn't think it was particularly busy. I don't know how you make the giant robots interact with the little robots.
I guess you could have like put them holding hands or something. So that when the big robot moved, the little robot moved or something. I don't know.
Just spitballing. Did you see the way the arms moved? The little baby robot would have been flying up to Mars. Ring.
It would have flung like poor. Oh, man. Who was it that Jessica in? Who was it from last season where they had the little bumper cars that like ended up flinging off?
Sam and Jessica. Yes.
Sam and Jessica. Yeah. So, yeah, I can see that. That's fair.
Next up, we have Susan and Jen. They are moms. And no, they are not soccer moms. They're Lego moms. They're friends from Utah. And their whole thing was this rebirth. Did you get the name of what they were building? Like rebuilt? What was it called?
I did not write down the name. All I wrote was swan emerging from egg.
Becoming. Yes. Becoming.
Okay. Oh, yes. Which, to me, has implications from Thomas Harris's Red Dragon, which is the first in the Hannibal Lecter series.
Ah.
So I was, maybe that's why I ignored that.
Okay. I'm just going to pretend you never said that and we're just going to move on.
That's
all right.
Fair.
Well, so, I mean, their whole thing was they had the carriage and then the swan emerging from the egg. So I guess it was sort of this rebirth. We're reclaiming our Legos, I guess, I think was the point of this. But they really suffered with the integrating movement into their build.
Yeah. And it sounded like, because at the end during the judging, they said, well, you pulled this together in a couple hours. So I didn't get it from the rest of the episode, but maybe they spent a lot of time coming up with some grand idea and then they had to pare it down last minute or something. Did you catch that?
What I got from their interaction, I think, with Jamie is who they were talking to, is they were going to have the swan come out of the egg and then open its wings. And they had a lot of elements of movement because that's where their critique came from. That was, look, build something that is simple, but works instead of trying to create this elaborate thing that then ultimately you're not going to be able to do. Because that was a little bit of the critique of the engineers as well. That was, oh, you're going to do three different types of movement. I think they were able to pull it off more successfully than Susan and Jen here.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Then I missed that part. I think their idea was good. The idea of kind of being reborn into this is my new thing, you know, then I'm not just a mother or however they were framing it. And the swan itself looked really nice and the carriage looked really nice. I think that design was good.
I agree with that. And I think the details also on the bottom of the float, I'm just looking at a still image now.
With the little flowers and
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of attention to detail. And I thought that that was pretty cool. But that's where those just added technical elements, I think, might trip them up in later challenges. But hopefully they're able to learn from this and then maybe plan something a little bit simpler, because I agree with you. I think the concept is really cool. And what they ultimately ended up doing, if they could get the two wheels to work, I think that would have been, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah. And I think Jen was the one that said it, but she said, you know, I'm used to having a lot more time to build these big elaborate things. And so having that 14-hour time crunch probably, you know, definitely changes things when you're building for 14 hours straight.
Right. Oh, I'm sure. And then also the added pressure of you're on being recorded on TV and there's camera people around and all of that, I'm sure adds. And you have Will Arnett making big loud noises when there's an hour left.
I would
left.
Definitely be distracted by that.
I know. It would be too much. Be like, can I ask you some questions about Arrested Development? Are you on a break? Can we just like chat?
Right. And then off camera, can we talk about BoJack Horseman? Because this doesn't seem like the show for BoJack Horseman questions.
So did he die at the end or no? Did he go to prison? What's your do you the conspiracy theory? I don't know if you've heard about it. Let me just dig in. Oh my God.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, mess. Okay. So Susan and Jen end up being in the bottom here, but I think this is something that they seem to have the vision. So maybe now once they have a little bit of a wake up call, they can recover from this, hopefully, and stay in the competition a little bit longer.
Yeah. And I think that's one reason I do like that the first episode, at least in these both two seasons now, has been a non-elimination, because it is such a different style of building if you're not used to it, having that time crunch and having the pressure, that I think it's a good kind of, you know, immersion type episode where, okay, this is what it's going to be like. Now take that knowledge forward and use it to improve your building.
Right. I mean, my gosh, I couldn't imagine a 14-hour day of straight building, because I'm sure they film it in one day. They do the intro, they do all the building and do the judging. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that little space shuttle thing I built for Twitter, I spent 3 hours trying to build a meteorite that was going to hit a mountain and got frustrated with it. And then in the span of about 5 minutes, built that little one with the shuttle.
Wow. Like, so very much Susan and Jen energy coming in there building
exactly.
it. In the
so I get it. Minute. You got a time frame and then you go, ah.
And then you freak out and you build something uh-huh. last minute. Got it.
Yep. And it worked out well. So there.
Okay. Next up are the twins. They are twins. There are two of them, Caleb and Jacob. They are from La Crosse, Wisconsin. They're brothers, obviously, given the fact that I just said they're twins. And they're okay. This is the build that I was actually alluding to in the beginning when we talk about storytelling, because they were given in the show the animation piece as well as they gave their whole tale. So their story was this lifelong expedition, and it was this story about two explorers stealing a diamond ring, and there was a camera and a shoe and a calculator, and then we find out that either Caleb or Jacob proposed to his fiancée. This was just overwhelmingly confusing to me, but the judges seemed to love it. So as a Lego expert, can you explain this to me?
So what I can explain is that at the beginning of the episode, Will Arnett said there would be more editing and graphics. And so yes. I'm wondering if they explained more about the story and we just got snippets of it, because I don't know why the running shoe was after them. Maybe they don't like Jim. I don't know why the camera was trying to shoot them. That seems really intense for no reason. And so, you know, were they secret child actors and paparazzi was after them? You know, I could make this whole elaborate thing about them, which would be really fun to do, but it doesn't help me explain their float.
Okay. I didn't think about that. The child actor twist that we could put on this. But, and the other thing was that when I looked at the float itself, not the animation, the laser from the camera wasn't shooting out anything. Mm-mm. So then I don't understand how they got, I don't know. It felt, don't get me wrong, I'm sure they're quite talented. And obviously the Brickmasters appreciated this for some reason, but I felt as a lay Lego person, I was not privy to what made this so great. It just looked like a confusing mess.
No, I don't think it's being a lay Lego person. I mean, there was some neat stuff they did, but even the movement itself, if I was using that as a parade float and the only movement was that tiny little boat, you know, I'd be kind of sad about that, I think.
Well, and you can't even see it. The shoe's in the way. If I was on the street as a little Lego person, I wouldn't be able to see it. I'm looking at it now. The tower is gorgeous, but the movement, I can't see. I mean, it's, yeah, I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah, I think they, you know, this is one of those where since they could tell the story that went with it, it, you know, you got more excitement out of it and it made more sense. But if you couldn't tell the story and you had to figure it out, mm-hmm. it would be a lot of, well, why is that there?
I don't understand the shoe or the calculator or the camera. I don't get it.
I don't understand the float and I'm not responding to it.
Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. So the thing is that clearly Caleb and Jacob have skills according to the judges. And that makes me interested to see what they're going to be building next. And maybe we'll finally get the story behind the camera calculator shoe attacks.
Yeah. I think what they built, you know, technically was good. Like the little camera looked like a camera, the shoe looked like a shoe. And then, like you said, the tower looked really nice with the little brick at the top. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. I think as far as meeting the challenge, it was a little difficult.
But that's the thing. That's where there's the disconnect between what the judges thought and what me, an idiot sitting at home, thinks, because I'm like, in my notes, I wrote, oh, okay, so the judges like that one. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what? Whatever. Congratulations to either Caleb or Jacob on your recent engagement. So at least you got that going for you, which is nice.
Yeah. No, in my notes, I said, why is there a sneaky sneaker? So, you know.
Oh, it's the alliteration. It's the alliteration there. That's how they get you.
That is how they get you.
Next up is Mark and Steven, brothers from Atlanta, Georgia. These guys were really interesting because I actually missed. So live, I missed the first half of the episode. So I just jumped in halfway through. Oh. And these guys know Tyler, the winner from season one, and actually built in a competition with him and beat him, I guess, which I missed. So then hearing that when I rewatched the episode to take notes, I was like, oh, okay. Come on, Mark and Steven.
Wow, you got real high pitch there.
I
competitive building, I know, is out there. It's nothing I've ever done, but I think that bodes well for them. And they had a lot of that good kind of model building. That serpent was really well done. The water on their float was really well done, you know, and then you had the little tiny Viking ship that was kind of tossing and turning, and they had a lot of good movement with it. I think they did a really good job.
Their build absolutely reminded me of the kind of stuff that Tyler and Amy would make from season one, because it was these big characters that they built. Not a lot of minifigures. It's not regular Lego scale. They build these very large constructed animals or creatures out of Legos and are really creative with the way that they do it. So I definitely noticed a lot of similarities there. I have a question. What is competitive level Lego building?
Exactly. So in Lego conventions and which are starting to pick up again, and actually Lego just announced its official Lego convention, because like the ones I've been to are not put on by Lego themselves. It's put on by fans and, you know, groups that are fans of Legos. So they have, you know, competitions where you get, you know, some bucket of bricks or something, and then you have to make something in a certain time frame. And, you know, they're not 14-hour builds like this sort of stuff, but, you know, there's challenges and you have to build little creative things, or sometimes they're timed. Sometimes you just bring in something and it gets judged, you know, best in show kind of thing, like a model train show or something. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're the time building, I think, of it all.
Right. That aspect is there. Yeah.
Be beneficial. Right. So their, you know, their build, they had the giant snake in the water. The movement was the Viking ancestry boat going up and down. The mouth of the snake was open. And I believe, according to Jamie, this was oozing with fun building techniques. Oozing.
Which I guess the water was kind of oozing. I don't know. But the water was like, that blew me away, because there was one scene where they kind of did zoom out and you could see all the little detail in the whites and the different colors of blue that they used and to make all the different waves and mm-hmm. how the boat was sitting on the waves. And so I didn't pay as much attention to the serpent, even though it was well done, too. But the water blew me away.
The water was really gorgeous. And this is, again, another example of how I wish they would focus a little bit more on that, because when you pause it and you look at it, it's wow, the attention to detail is absolutely gorgeous. I don't even know how they did that. That's so freaking creative. And I think they absolutely deserve their spot in the top two this episode.
Yeah, I agree. As far as tying in large scale movement in a, you know, parade type format, I think they did. They and Zach and Wayne did the best job for that.
Right. Really, really executed, I think, the requirements of the challenge. I have a feeling like we're going to see them in the final three. If I had to bet on one team being here in the final three, it's going to be them, Mark and Steven.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
I think, first of all, obviously, if they run in the same circles as Tyler and Amy ended up winning season one, but also just that next level of the competitive building, I'm sure, is going to help them throughout the competition.
Yeah, for sure. I'd agree with that.
Okay. The next team that we're going to talk about, I am super excited about these guys.
Yeah!
I wish that more time was spent on them, because I think they had an absolutely fabulous build. And that is Dave and Richard from Chicago and Brooklyn. And they did the whole hot dog pizza float.
The pizza was so cool. Cool job with that. No, I agree. And I think I'm hoping that it's because, you know, I think they did this in the first season too, where the first episode, you're cramming a bunch of people in, so you might not give as much screen time to somebody that you know, in final editing that you know is going to be there longer. So I'm really hoping that's what that indicates, because the food was really well done. They made, you know, larger scale macro figures of themselves that were really cool. Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I think they should have spent more time on it.
I completely agree as well. I think if I had to pick, I don't know, it's tough. I'm not a brick master, but they would have been my third place probably based on what they created. I think also they were really smart. So they had the massive pizza, the massive hot dog. They did the two city skylines and the two different colors in the background. Great detail. Of course, you mentioned the figures of themselves that they built, but the way that they incorporated the movement was also really smart.
It was so cool.
So smart. So the way they did the letters of Chicago and New York spinning integrates the two. And also it's something that you know is going to work. You don't have to worry about the weight of the letters not being able to spin with the motors, which I think a lot of other teams struggled with. For example, we'll talk about the butterfly with the giant wings, or the swan, which they couldn't get to work. So I thought just really smart, really creative, super excited about them. I hope they're in it for the long haul.
Yeah, no, I agree. That, but then there was a shot in the middle of the episode where they kind of showed the structure of the pizza coming together without, you know, all the detail of the toppings and stuff. And as soon as they showed him holding it, I was like, oh man, that makes me want a big slice of New York style pizza. Like, that just already looks so cool.
I never thought Legos would make me hungry, but here we are.
Right. So yeah, no, I agree. I think they're going to be going forward for a while as well.
Okay, Zach and Tim, they are from Michigan. This is the father-son duo, not the brother duo. We did get a whole lot of time on these guys. I think they're the only father-son team in the competition. They want to really represent their hometown. So they did the Four Seasons of Michigan. No, not the hotel. The four, you know, like weather seasons. I know. I'm a genius. I'm a comedy genius.
Good one. Good
Thank
one.
You.
Okay, Ken.
Thank you.
Aww. No, it was, we didn't get a lot of time with them again. And I think, you know, the episode kind of lent itself to that just because there's so many people to cram in. And it looked like a pretty nice float, and they had good divisions, and their little clock tower with the passage of time was a cool idea. It definitely seemed like the father was driving a little more of the team. So I'm curious to see how that dynamic plays out.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I think in some of these teams, you can tell that there's one person that's maybe more the Lego person than the other. And they really want to be on the show. And so they recruit their family member friend to participate. And I think this was one where it was pretty clear to me as well. Zach was the 18-year-old. Yeah, Zach was just, you know, having a great time. But I think if I had to pick, I think Tim's the Lego guy here. Not that they both can't be, but, you know.
Right. No, but the way the team dynamic was definitely more like Tim was like, OK, this is what we're doing. We're going to do the Seasons of Michigan and And son was like, yeah, okay.
All right, sure. Whatever, whatever, yep. Dad. The movement that they were able to incorporate here was their clock tower spinning, which represents the passage of time. I thought that that was pretty cool. The main critique for them, though, was that the float just felt too cluttered and there were too many minifigures here.
Yeah, and it was a little busy at the bottom, and Amy made a comment that you could have made the clock tower, you know, more of a focal point in making the rotation part a little bigger, more kind of, you know, comical type, not comical, but you know what I'm trying to say, more mm-hmm. overdone. Mm-hmm. And I could see that being a good, you know, good critique of that float.
I wish,
but it wasn't poorly done.
Right, exactly. I wish it was just a little bit taller, maybe one more little bit taller, because I think the way that they do the tree actually cuts off about half of the height of the tower. So just a little bit more to make it a little bit more overstated. But potentially, again, they'll be able to learn from the critiques and apply it to the next challenge.
Yeah, yeah. I hope, you know, we see what they learn and what we move on with them.
That's right.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay. We have a lot of siblings here, and Brian and Lauren are the next group of siblings. They are brother, sister from California, and they decide to do sibling story time with the prince pulling on Rapunzel's hair, or at least I think that that's what that motion was supposed to be.
Yes, I believe it was. He was kind of hanging off her hair, and they actually also had really good kind of character building in Rapunzel and her facial expressions. And the tower was this bright pink tower, so it kind of stands out. I can picture like a parade float with, you know, all those little pink flowers or something that they sometimes use to give just broad color to a part of a float. I can see that being on there.
Mm-hmm. They had a book also was a big element, which was kind of in the back. And then they had themselves also on the float. I don't know if they pointed that out with the judges, but they had them in bed, I think, with one of their parents reading to them. So then it was, okay, here's the gateway into the story time with the prince and Rapunzel. They also got to film that promo. So, you know, they're in it for the long haul, right?
Yeah, definitely.
It's on.
Was it? It's on. That's right.
It's on. What was the other one? There were two of them. The second one. Oh, it's raw because of the sushi.
Yep. Yeah.
No.
Or even Will Arnett's like, yeah, no. You can use that or not. I don't care.
Ideally, you're not. I mean, I'm not an executive producer, but if I was EP, I'd just X
that one. He is. He is this season.
Oh, is he really? Was he EP last season?
I don't think he was last season, but he is this season. I meant to go back and look at one of last season's episodes, but. Yeah.
Oh, good for him. Good for him. Anyway, honestly, I don't have much more to say about them. I felt by the end, especially of the judging, we were just whipping
so
through
many.
Them.
Yeah, right. No.
And
yeah, it was.
That's all I
it
got.
Was good. There was, you know, the movement was what the prince kind of hanging off the hair, and that was good. But yeah,
yeah. Right. It was a decent flip. We'll see what we get from them later on. Natalie and Michelle, they are actually, I believe, the first team that get their own little confessional at the beginning of the episode. And we learn that they are their friends from Oklahoma and Mesa, Arizona. Shout out Mesa, Arizona,
yeah, right.
Where my mom lives, and Tyson Apostle. And they are doing color explosion with the Tower of Paint Cans.
Yeah, I really like their float. I thought it was super well done, colorful. The way the paint dripped off the paint cans was just really stylish and used a lot of the, there's a Lego series out called Dots, which actually I was saving for Jack and Don, but we'll talk about it here. And they've come out with a lot of these little tiny flat pieces that you can use to make these little intricate designs. And it's, they made really good use of them. And then the face on the spray can was really funny too. I liked it.
The color selection here, I thought was really gorgeous. And then when they did the paint swatch things as well. Oh my God, that just reminds me of going to the paint store. What was that paint store on County Line and
Guiry's?
Guiry's, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what, for some reason that reminded me of this. And the way that they did, like you said, the paint dripping, they made it look curved. Legos are blocks. Mm-hmm. They're not curved. And I think that that shows that they have an eye for how to put pieces together to make unique shapes.
Real Legos have curves.
Real Legos have curves.
Yeah, no, I think they made really good use of those dots style Legos too.
So the top of the paint can that was spinning, what were those beads? Those aren't are those Lego pieces?
Those were chains actually. So you know I think the most common color is gray for these little chains or brown. But they do make some fluorescent yellow ones and some other colors. And I think that's what they were, is these little Lego fluorescent yellow chains that have, you know, a single round stud on each side. And then you can hook them into things and they'll dangle down. And because I had to kind of slow it down and stop it to look at it to figure out what they were at first.
Ah, I see. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. I think that's a unique piece that at least I don't remember seeing much featured. So that's a really interesting idea that they were able to pull off.
Yeah, and I think it was a really good use of that piece to show, like, paint flinging off the lid, too.
Right, exactly, yes. And it's, you know, it's not the most movement, but I think the fact that it's at the top, it's colorful, you get the actual movement of the chains as they spin out, I think just draws your eye to that part of the float.
Yeah, I agree. I think, and, you know, it told their story of they're both in construction, interior design, and decorating, and, you know, what more goes into that than a lot of paint?
Right. they knew it was theirs. Then I think that was part of the goal. So they definitely executed that. The next pair that we have to talk about, Jack and Don. They are motorcycle riders, or at least Jack is. They are siblings from Ohio and Michigan. And Jack has been playing with Legos since before a lot of these kids were born.
Which is probably true. I don't remember. I think I looked at his age. I think it was in his 50s. You know, and most of the people on the show are under 40. So that does make sense.
He is 67.
67? Holy cow. Well, he looks great. Good for him.
You look great. You must wear sunscreen. Good for you. That's skincare routine.
Especially out on a bike. That's
well, it's the helmet, hopefully, that he wears, right? You know?
Oh, that. Well, yes, hopefully. That's true.
And his sister, Dawn, is also there. It was hard to tell. Are they shared traits of the two of them? But, you know, whatever. Regardless, they seem lovely. I'm happy that they're here. And they dedicated their float to their great niece, who unfortunately passed away in November, which I thought was just a really great way to honor her. And especially because you never know how long you're going to be on a season. So, you know, get in there. Yeah. Do it from the get go.
You know what? Yeah. And they showed off. This is where I was going to talk about the dots. But those bracelets they were wearing was part of the dot series that came out last year in March. And so they come out with these little bands. They're kind of like Fitbit bands, but then they've got Lego studs on them. And then you can put the little individual pieces like the like Natalie and Michelle used for their paint cans to build the little designs and stuff.
OK,
so that was sweet. Huh.
The more you know.
There you go.
Now, they tried to get the wings to move on their butterfly. So they had the honor for Kelsey, their great niece, was this big, beautiful butterfly. And they created these really gorgeous wings. But I think, unfortunately, they were just too heavy. And so they weren't able to do the movement of the wings and had to settle for one leg, I think, is what we got.
I think so. I couldn't tell because I don't know if they showed the other side, if they had, because they had the original movement on both sides. So maybe they had one leg on each side that was moving.
Okay. I think they're both going one on each side. But they were, I believe, the only team that I saw to incorporate lights. The eyes of the butterfly lit up. I don't know if you noticed that.
I did. And that made me think of last season too, where there was one team that did that in their Sphinx. And I can't think of their names off the top of my head. But yeah, that was neat because I always think the light up bricks are very cool.
Very cool. A good way to set them apart. I think with now having one build under their belt, they'll, again, sort of learn the lessons. I think similarly to what Susan and Jen will hopefully now understand is that the movement, that's no joke. And you really have to have a solid concept and try some of the movement pieces before you build the whole thing. But otherwise, I thought it was really gorgeous.
Yeah, no, the butterfly wings were really pretty and they used good colors for that. The float itself was really colorful and they had their grandniece Kelsey there standing with the, you know, holding the chain for the butterfly, I think it was, and mm-hmm. or the leash, I guess. So, yeah, I thought otherwise it looked really, really cool.
And that this is something I could absolutely see as a float. And so I think they not only, I mean, apart from the issues with the movement, I think they executed the challenge and, of course, had a really great tribute to Kelsey.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, last up, Maria and Philip. They are a married couple in Grand Rapids, Michigan. They've been married for 16 years, two kids, unassuming couple, and they are going to make the bedtime story about little Bo Peep.
Yeah, they describe themselves as cute but fierce. So I'm curious to see where this goes. I liked their sheep. I thought their sheep were absolutely adorable little puffball looking things.
So
they're
cute.
Great.
So cute.
I do agree with the judge's critique that it would be neat if one of the sheep itself was like kind of jumping over and that was their movement. But I think the float told a really good story otherwise.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if they had time to do this, but I think this could easily be a winning build if you just elevate up the whole bed piece and then you somehow make the sheep just rotating around in kind of a Ferris wheel. So it goes into the ground underneath and comes back up, because then it solves the critique of not enough height. So you get it up a little bit and then you get the movement of the sheep, because I think the only movement that they had was actually kind of weird. It was the kid shuffling back and forth in bed.
Yeah,
just kind of scooting his legs and scooting his little torso up and down, which I thought was
I thought it was kind of funny because it, you know, it took me a second to see what was moving and I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of fun, but it is really subtle when the challenge is about incorporating movement. So
right.
Yeah. I think your idea would be a good way.
I think so. I think it was, yeah, maybe the kid was supposed to represent that the kid won't sleep. Like, count sheep, stop moving.
Yeah, I think that, to me, that's how I interpreted it. But, you know, I don't have any kids, so, except you.
Yeah.
You wouldn't quit wiggling.
That's true. That is true. I still don't quit wiggling. Wiggle to the top. Wiggle to the top. All right. They did talk about that they like to build smaller, intricate models, and that makes me a little bit nervous for them, just because the models that we see be successful in the show are typically the ones that are much bigger and a lot of bang. And I, you know, I'm a little nervous for Marie and Phil. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. No, I'd agree. I think there's some challenges that would really suit them well, depending on what the challenges are, that need that, you know, more attention to detail and intricacy. But that also can take a lot of time to build as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they move forward.
Mm-hmm. And we get Philip's super positive attitude with Maria asking, do you think we'll get the golden brick? No.
Nope.
I mean,
well, you know, there's also realism.
Yeah, I was going to say he's realistic. What was it? They're unassuming. What was it that they unassuming with a bite or something? What was it?
Cute, but fierce.
OK, I don't know where that came from. So that's just
unassuming but with a bite. That sounds like a sandwich ad or something.
Eat fresh. Unassuming, but with a bite.
New Subway's green chili.
Yeah. Ooh, green chili sub. Well, you know what? I could see it. No,
anyway. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I think so. That does it for each of the individual couples. So just to recap, in the bottom, we do have Susan and Jen, who made the float with the goose, geese, swan.
Yeah.
What is it? God, I don't know anything about birds.
Swan coming.
Swan. You know,
at least I hope it was a swan.
The pigeon coming out of the egg. Classic rebirth story.
I think it was an emu. I'm not sure.
An ostrich. It's weird because it usually keeps its head in the ground. I don't know anyway. But so they were up for potential elimination with Maria and Philip as well. But no one goes home and they all get to stay to compete another day. In the top, we discussed this already, but we get Zach and Wayne, who were the sushi chefs who ultimately end up winning. And then Steven and Mark, the competitive Lego builders, are also in the top, which, you know, very close, but no cigar. But I don't. Honestly, I don't know if they'll even need it. That'll be fine.
Yeah, right. No, I thought it was really cute. Zach and Wayne actually locked arms when they were getting ready to announce who won the golden brick, which I was like, oh, that's sweet.
Very cute. So, very cute. Yeah. Next week, Marisa, we have explosions. I am so excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited that they brought this challenge back. So they had this last year. And the whole point is you make something that when it explodes, it looks awesome, and it also kind of tells a story. So yeah, I'm really excited to see if they're gonna do, because last year they had three different ways to explode it. You could, or two ways to explode it, or you could drop it, I think it was. So I'm curious to see what they do next week with that one.
I'm pretty sure it was it was like picking straws, and then it was either they dropped it, they smacked it with a bat, or they exploded it with the compressed air within.
That's right.
And I'm pretty sure that was the case. And so I think that's going to be interesting. We'll see if they bring that back. This one was always really fascinating to me because you also have to think about how you're going to engineer the build so that when it does explode, it makes a cool scene. So I think, who is it that filled their planets? They built, was it, I don't remember. Oh, was it Boone, Mark and Boone?
Shoot.
Anyway,
I don't remember either. I'd have to look it up.
They filled their planets with a bunch of tiles or Lego bricks, whatever the word is, and then it exploded, and it was really cool. And I'm hoping that we get something similar this episode because that was really fun when they did it last season.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm excited to see next week. And then coming up, you know, some of the promos and stuff, I'm really excited for. It looks like there's going to be one where they have to build something that withstands an earthquake table, which I'm really excited about.
Yes.
And then there's also one where it looks like they have to build a big mask or something. I don't know if you caught that.
Oh, very cool. Well, okay, good. I'm happy that they are mixing up and doing some different ones. Did I ever tell you the story? So I had an engineering professor who he told this story once, and he was living and working in California, and he woke up to an earthquake, and he told the story about how his first thought was not, is my family okay? It was, is my building still standing?
I mean, that's fair. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Same energy.
Yeah, right.
This is my Lego building still standing. Anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that. My favorite thing that when museums had earthquake tables, I always loved that growing up. And then when I was an undergraduate student here at Colorado Mesa University, part of the geology club, we went to the dinosaur museum in town because we come from we're in an area where there's a lot of dinosaur fossils found, and they have an earthquake table there. So in our like volunteer with the kids day, we bought a bunch of those cardboard brick like blocks, and we let kids build stuff on the earthquake table and then put these little plastic dinosaurs on them and then start the earthquake and see it all fall down. It was really fun.
Let me crush your dreams while you build this temporary. Get over it, children.
Yeah, there are some kids that were way into it. They thought it was the best thing ever. And then there was one kid, like little kid, that cried when it fell over.
See?
That's so bad.
That's what I'm saying. You crushed their dreams.
I know. But yeah, so, you know, that was only, 7 years ago, I was still playing with earthquake tables.
Hey, so, you know, it stays with you forever.
It does.
I think that does it for us, Marisa. Is there anything else you want to say about the episode before we get out of here?
No, but I do want to say I've been enjoying the Twitter tie-ins between all the reality shows because Ken Jeong and Joel McHale and Will Arnett have all been tweeting at each other to help promote each other's shows, and it's been really entertaining.
Well, that actually brings us, I think, to a really next fabulous point we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about is, I guess, the expanded Fox reality TV universe, obviously very similar to Marvel, same level of success. And Joel McHale is hosting Crime Scene Kitchen. So this premiered after The Masked Singer last week and I had a really great time watching the show.
Yeah, I did too. I like Joel McHale anyway. He's one of my favorite guest hosts on Masked Singer. And so, you know, I've watched him from The Soup and obviously Community and a few other things he's been in. But, you know, combine him with a cooking show I'm in, because cooking show reality shows are usually what my interest is. So I was super excited and I was not disappointed. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So for those of you who didn't see the episode, it was essentially, I believe, six teams that all came in and they got to investigate this kitchen where something was baked, and they had to take all of the clues from the quote unquote crime scene kitchen, put them together, and then try to recreate what they thought was built, which I thought was really cool, because it wasn't just, oh, just try to guess what it is. You actually have to try to recreate it. So then they're judged based on whether or not they guessed the correct baked good and based on how well they baked the item.
Yeah, I was super exciting because, you know, I really enjoy baking, but I am not that proficient in a lot of desserts because I'm more of a bread person. But, you know, putting the clues together and trying to guess it for me was really exciting. And of the two, they did kind of a two-step, you know, crime scene kitchen and bake it. There was the first round where you got an advantage and the second round where there was an actual elimination. And the second round, I guessed what it was and I got so excited with myself.
Would you, so if you had to compete on one, Lego Masters or Crime Scene Kitchen, which one would you want to compete on?
Oh, Lego Masters for sure.
Oh, okay.
because if I have to bake a dessert, my cake is going to fall apart or not cook well. If it was bread scene kitchen, I don't, that doesn't make sense.
Bread scene kitchen.
It seems like what I'm curious about is it's called Crime Scene Kitchen, but is it all baking? Because I think you'd said it's a baking show, right?
I think it's baking. I think it's only baking, because also based on the people that they cast for the show, it was people from, like, the professionals were bakers.
Oh, baking. Yeah, right. Okay, that makes sense.
Right. So
that would,
I don't think,
really complicated otherwise.
Oh my gosh, I couldn't imagine if they also included every other single thing you could make in the universe.
Yeah, they would have to have an episode with like risotto and scallops and have Gordon Ramsay as a guest judge so he can yell at them about them.
Well, they did have, so the Joel McHale is hosting, but then the two, I guess, the equivalent of the Brick Masters for Crime Scene Kitchen, the actual,
the Bake,
you know,
Masters.
Bakers, the Bake Masters, there we go. It was, I believe, Curtis Stone and Yolanda Gamp were the two. So that was neat, actually, because Curtis Stone, we know him, right, for things?
Yeah, yeah, he's been on a lot of stuff. He's, he makes a lot of guest appearances on cooking competitions. I think he might have been on a Worst Cooks in America or something once. I'm not sure. I'd have to look it up.
Okay. But, and then,
yeah, he's been around for a while.
Right. And then I think, do I have a book from him? I don't know. Anyway. And then Yolanda, I remember her from Nailed It when she was on Nailed It. And I thought that she was a lot of fun there.
Yeah.
So I'm happy that she was able to come for Crime Scene Kitchen. But we are going to get, I guess, another set of contestants to come in for the next group. I guess I don't know how it's going to work from there, but I really enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, no, I did too. And I'm definitely going to be watching it at least for the foreseeable future, because I think it's a fun show. It's kind of cool to see what these teams create. I mean, they obviously had some really super talented people on here, like the two Vegas pastry chefs that were,
oh my God, I know,
insane. But it was neat to see that even though they made like the most gorgeous looking dessert, they actually didn't win because they didn't copy what was made in the kitchen. Exactly.
Right.
So that was kind of neat.
Yeah, exactly. You had, your goal was to try to replicate what was made. And that seemed to be the top criteria, which I was happy about, because it should be. That's literally the goal of the show. I don't care how good you make the thing. It's gotta, you know, it's gotta be naked or whatever the cake was. I know nothing about baked goods. So when a hummingbird cake, I've literally never heard of that in my entire life. I still don't know what it is. It's got pineapple, though, I think.
Yeah, no, that was a new one for me, actually, because all I could think of was pineapple upside down cake, which I think was Grandpa's favorite dessert.
Yes.
Grandpa Willie's.
Mm-hmm. Yes, aw, we should try to figure out how to make that, because is it in a Bundt cake pan? Why do I think that that's...
It is. You are correct.
Okay.
It's kind of like an angel food style shape.
Yes.
Nice.
Okay.
Good job.
See, I should be on Crime Scene Kitchen. I'm so good. So
all right. Well, when they have a pineapple upside down cake, you would nail it.
That's right. That one dessert is literally the only thing.
I see a bundt cake and a pineapple.
No, that's all. I told Puya, like, I'm making brownies every round because I don't know how to make anything else. Liana, this is a creme brulee and you made brownies again.
But they were delicious, so somehow you get to keep going.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Awesome.
Lisa, thank you for joining me on this fun journey. I had a great time.
Hey, me too. Thanks for having me back. I'm really excited to talk about this season, and yay! Legos.
Yay! To talk briefly about logistics, I think probably we'll be back after episodes 2, 3, and 4, so we will cover those three episodes all in one little pack together, and that will then catch us up in the next couple of weeks. So Marisa, would you like to plug your social media handle? I know that you put out some really cool pictures, like you mentioned the rocket ship Tensegrity statue on Twitter.
Yeah, so I am mostly active-ish on Twitter and a little bit on Reddit. My Twitter handle is at Shinura, which is TSHENURA, or you can find me by comment on Liana a lot, so you can find me that way.
you can also go to my Twitter at Liana RHAP and find Marisa that way as well. So I am actually only podcasting about Lego Masters right now. I'm on a little bit of a hiatus. I am filling in for Rob on the 90 Day Fiance podcast with my very own 90 Day Fiance, who won Puya Zanvakili, and we are talking about the mess that is 90 Day Fiance, which is one thing that when I watch shows like this of people who are technically competent at something, oh man, they're so much better than me. And then I watch 90 Day Fiance and I'm like, wow, what a train wreck. I'm so much better than them. So I need both in my life.
Oh, that was totally my motivation for when I started watching Temptation Island way back in the 2000s when it first started, like in 2001 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was like, man, at least I'm not that person.
It's the small things in life. And also Drag Race will be back for All-Star Season 6. That we're going to be in the next couple of weeks recording a preview podcast to talk about the queens that are going to be featured on All-Star 6. And then Beth, Amon, and myself will be back to cover that in full. It is the beginning of the month. So if you are interested in becoming a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, you should check out either patreon.com/RHAP or robhasawebsite.com/patron. If you join the patron community, you get a lot of really fun perks. We're actually doing a promo right now for the buddy system. So if you are already a patron and you recommend somebody to our patron program, there are a little few extra bonuses for you. We're actually going to be doing a really fun patron mafia game next week with all of the Rob Has a Podcast podcasters. Puya and I are going to be doing commentary for that. I really highly recommend you join because you can have access to our Facebook groups and support all of the wonderful content that we do here at Rob Has a Podcast. I was about to ask for star ratings and reviews on iTunes, but that's for the Drag Race podcast, not for this one. We're just in the regular old reality TV wrap-ups page, but feel free to leave a review there as well. Thank you, Scott St. Pierre, behind the scenes, and we will be back soon. Bye.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.